She has given us a go ahead to say we can start with the presentation. So I'm going to hand over. I'm told CFO is the one who is going to lead us. I'm handing over to, I don't know who is the CFO, I'm looking around. Okay. I'm handing over to CFO to lead the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. In the last portfolio committee, we were asked to say what did we do after the Auditor General wanted us to implement a turnaround strategy to the classification of the EPWP projects. So this is the presentation that I'm going to start with. And then from there, then I'm going to deal with our response to the AG findings. Next slide.
I battle now in my head, because we have called you specifically here to talk to the annual report.
Yes.
And beyond that, yes, the AG's report.
Yes. So I've got three of them.
I don't know now, this one, this third one. So I'm trying to say our focus is on the two.
Yes.
Well, you can talk, I will not say what are you saying,
yes.
Because I will not know what you are saying.
Yes.
As long as you think it is going to help us to have an understanding,
yes,
of what is going on. Okay.
Chair, if I may quickly come in. The annual report, we can quickly talk to what is in the content of the annual report. The content therein will be similar to what we presented last time when we were presenting quarter four report. But we can also briefly talk to what have been the changes now that, I think this is the link we're making to say in finalizing the annual report, what have been the changes with now the audit outcome being finalized. So I can start with the first presentation, Chair, if that is fine, to just talk briefly to the annual report. Which
it will be fine, but I also want to clear that the fourth quarter is not the annual report, because I think we have had that confusion. The annual report is prescribed in terms of the law that a department will present an annual report prescribed. The fourth quarter was fourth quarter. Like I'm saying, we don't have to, we want to clear that confusion so that next time we don't have that. Okay. Let's present then.
Thank you, Chair. We'll go through that. As a department, when we set our target annual report.
Question?
No. Okay, I was asking her to put up the annual report. Thank you, Chair. I will then quickly take the committee through the annual report of the department, and CFO will then follow through with the financial statements there. Okay. Chair, in the first two slides, we are highlighting, so I wanted to just give context that in terms of our planning in the department, our plans are cumulative. So when we get to, and this is just to clarify why the information is similar to the information you engaged in previously. When we then get to fourth quarter, instead of reporting only on the activities that took place in the fourth quarter, it would have been cumulative progress as at the end of that financial year. So the progress you'll engage with would be similar on the basis of that. The first two slides talk to the high-level achievements that we've had per each of the programs. Chair, I'm not sure if you would want me to go through each and every single indicator or focus on the indicators that we did not achieve targets on, but briefly talk to overall performance of the department. I'm happy to go through everything.
Once they focus, the presenter focuses on what the department didn't achieve, we'll be left out without knowing what did the department achieve, so that we must have both of them, so that we...
In the interest of time, Chair, so that I don't repeat those high-level areas, I'll go through each program. And starting with program one, on program one, firstly, I will give you overall performance for that program. And overall performance for that program, there was a total of 31 indicators. 24 of those were fully achieved, and 7 of those were not fully achieved. Now, going through the details of each of them, the first indicator is around external audit opinion, and I think we've just received a briefing on that even from the AG, that for 2017-18, the department got an adverse external audit opinion. For the 2018-19 financial year, the department got a qualified audit opinion. And as CFO talks to a financial presentation, she will then talk to some of the details that led to the qualification. But suffice to say that there is a plan that that deals with corrective measures, where we have defined a strategy which you will then talk to on how we will address those audit findings going forward. The other area which we didn't fully meet the target was on expenditure, and this is still linked to areas that we then had challenges in terms of modified cash standards, and as a result we didn't want to spend. It's page 5, slide 5. We needed to look at some of our contracts, EPWP contracts, and then change the... The slides are not moving. That's why everybody's looking at me. Oh, the technical issue. Oh. We then needed to look at some of the contracts for EPWP, and that led to delays in terms of expenditure. We've met our targets in terms of affirmative procurement. We've met our targets in terms of resources that we have mobilized. I do recall there was a question on this, on the details that were then subsequently submitted. We also have a program with our transfrontier conservation areas where we're looking at funding for those. We were able to get a project in that area in Mbombo, transfrontier conservation area funded, so we met our target there. We have a challenge in terms of vacancy rate. You will see that our target was 8%. We were at 10.4%. I think AG spoke briefly to that. Just to give context to that, as a result of the budget cut, I think it was a 2%, is it 2% CFO, budget cut on compensation budget that was introduced by Treasury, we do not have adequate funding to fill all the vacancies. However, the vacancies that we had in the main were at lower level and admin posts. So we then needed to prioritize and look at which posts we need to fill. In terms of management posts, there was only one post that was not filled in that particular year, and it was the post of in director internal audit. That's the post that was not filled, and this is an area that we have as a core soft model, so it did not impact on the ability to perform the functions because it is core soft, and we also have providers that are helping us with that area of work. In terms of compliance with employment equity targets, we've met all targets except the target on women in SMS. Firstly, we did not have vacancies at SMS level to be able to fill the post with a female SMS. That was the first area. So in essence, I think we have said jokingly that this would mean we would need to get away to get rid of a few men in the department if we are to meet.
I'm told you are disturbing the meeting.
Okay. So we're at 44% in terms of that. The other area of work is around secure, harmonious, and transformed working environment that we have, and this basically looks at the number of days that we take to resolve any labor matters, whether it's disciplinary cases, in terms of misconduct cases. The standard in the public service is on average it should take us 90 days to resolve this. We were able to resolve all our cases, but the issue is this is an efficiency indicator. We, on average, we resolve them in 103 days as opposed to 90 days. The same applies to grievance cases. The standard in the public service is on average you must resolve them in 30 days. Our average was 31 days, so we missed that target in terms of by one day in terms of the averages. But all of them were then dealt with and resolved. Moving on to the next areas of work, which I will not spend time on because the targets in those areas were met, just to give a sense of what those were. It was issues around our information and technology services, specifically for the ocean and coast information, so that we're able to monitor effectively in that area of work. There are issues around profiling for the department and how we engage with the different communities and stakeholders, and our awareness campaign that we have and we conducted during the period under review. So our targets in those areas were met. We also met our targets in terms of capacity building, where we trained. We had interventions around teacher training, but also we had an intervention around young people that are on environmental leadership. I hope members would recall that when we discussed this last time, we said while we did not do the process that we used to follow with the sitters on getting learners, we then partnered with a private sector to still ensure that we then have young people that are placed on work integrated learning so that we still meet our target despite the financial challenges that we have. We also have training sessions for environmental management that we do, and we were able to conduct the training sessions. We are planning to do 16 training sessions, but we then combined, I think it was in Northwest, instead of running two sessions, we then got people from different districts and municipalities, and we conducted one training session. So the training was still done, it's just that instead of doing two, we then did one for that province. In terms of building capacity in local government, we every year develop a plan on how identifying the different areas that different municipalities need support on. We had a total of 17 activities that we had planned to do. There were three activities that we didn't conclude before the end of the financial year. One was to host an annual integrated coastal management lehotla. I think the coastal provinces had requested that they would want us to engage with them and convene the session. That session was not convened before the end of the financial year, but it was convened in the first quarter of this financial year. There was also an issue around a legal protocol on environmental, on environment, on managing environmental functions that we needed to conclude together with SALGA. There were delays in terms of approving the memorandum of agreement with SALGA, and those issues were still being dealt with. The other area was around how we address climate risks, especially water-related issues that we need to look at, and developing funding proposals. And this activity was then postponed to further link with the climate bill, because that was postponed in the DOC. That is a target that we didn't meet, and the two are related, so we couldn't conclude that process. The next area was around is around knowledge and science and policy interface, where we were able to meet our targets on it, and also in terms of having a web-based climate change monitoring and evaluation system that we were able to do. In terms of our international negotiations, all our positions were processed through the proper channels, and they were approved and presented, and we did convene the COPs that we were to convene in that financial year. So that deals, the next area deals with the issues around the positions and also the reporting, because there's mandatory reporting that then comes with the international engagements that we have. So we did submit all the five mandatory reports that we were supposed to submit. The only one that was done a bit late was one on transfrontier conservation areas, and the reason it was slightly late was because the engagement happened on the last day, I think, of the financial year, so you could only give the report in April. So that is the overall performance for Program 1. As I've indicated, Program 1 had met 77% of the targets. On the printed versions, I think the green shows, it's not showing on the screen, and seven of those are the ones that I say were slightly missed. Moving on to Program 2 quickly. In terms of Program 2, the first area of work is around compliance with environmental legislation, and there are different activities. The first activity that we look at there is how industry is responding to our administrative enforcement actions. So we're targeting to see if we can at least get industry responding or implementing 75% of our enforcement actions that we have. So you can judge that this is an area of work that is dependent on the activities of industry and compliance of industry, but we follow up to ensure that they're still following. So we issued pre-compliance notices and industry makes representations to the department on how they will respond to those, and for those that don't give the representations, we also then look at final compliance notices with them, and then we go and monitor whether they've complied. Out of the 14 final compliance notices that we issued, only 7 of those were complied to by industry, and there has been engagements with them and follow up with them, and we're taking the matters forward on ensuring that how do we then enforce that they comply. So our approach normally is you do facilitative compliance first, and then you get to compliance only after, enforcement only after this administrative actions have failed. The other area where we did not fully meet the target on is on criminal cases that we are finalizing. So this is about investigations. It's our responsibility is to finalize the investigations and hand over the dockets to NPA. So in that case, we had planned to look at to finalize 44 that we had. We were able to finalize 41 within time frames. Other cases, I think 3 of the ones that we had took longer than anticipated, and they were then only finalized in the first quarter of this financial year. The inspections were done. We were able to conduct all our inspections, and we ended up with a bit exceeding the target in terms of those. Because we had planned inspections, but we also needed to respond to incidents that were being raised and go into and conducting inspections on those. On the joint compliance and enforcement operations that we do with other sectors, we were able to conclude those and find according to plan. The other area that we have is on the number of officials that are trained in environmental compliance and enforcement. You would see that in that area of work, we exceeded the target of 720, and we ended up training 1,966 officials were trained in that. And in the main, the issue here was there was more demand for training, especially with the changes in government, and as a result, the sessions that we had, we ended up with more people than we had anticipated to have in those training sessions. The other area of work where we did not fully meet the target on is around our strategy for management of rhino population. We have different interventions that we are looking at there, and the area where we had challenges on was around Rhino law enforcement interventions, specifically the joint operations that we were to have with Mozambique in terms of managing in that area. And the issue there was the challenges that they had in Mozambique due to the cyclone, and we then had to postpone our joint committee meetings with them. The other area of work looks at regulatory systems and decision support across government, where we are looking at streamlining authorization and management processes, and in those areas we met our targets. Where we did not fully meet our target was on the minimum environmental requirements for SDF that we did not finalize. So we did publish the Gazette there, seeking public comments. That was done, that was finalized. However, the meeting, because normally we go to MINMEC, we present it to provinces and get agreement on how to go. So those meetings happened late, so the gazetting process as a result ended up happening late. But this then process was done, and the process closed on the 10th of June. So it took it to the next financial year as opposed to concluding the process in the applicable financial year. Overall, performance of this program, 67%, which means out of the 12 targets that they had, they fully met 8, and they didn't meet, they partially met their targets in terms of 4 areas, 4 indicators. Moving on to the next program, which is around oceans and coast. Firstly, the objective there being on how we manage threats to environmental quality and integrity. We met our target in terms of hotspot identification and giving a report on that. This helps us with assessing coastal vulnerabilities and helps us in terms of our climate change management or mitigation processes and adaptation. So that was then done. The area where we did not fully meet our target was around Integrated Coastal Management Act, where we're looking at coastal management lines. We wanted those to be incorporated into the management plans in terms of sandparks on the areas that they are managing, specifically the Garden Route National Park. That process was not finalized, and there were actually issues around different legislative requirements, the ones that we have in the National Environmental Management Act, the NEMA, and also the management plan of the Garden Route National Park. So there were delays in that area of work, but we have, however, then gazetted the Garden Route Management Park for public comment, and responses for that are being finalized, and we should be able to finalize then the gazetting for implementation in this financial year. The other area where we did not fully meet the target, we met our target on coastal water quality guidelines for 2 priority areas, which was in the West Coast and the South Coast, so that was done. What we did not meet is our target around the Antarctic strategy, which we had hoped to get it finalized and gazetted by cabinet in the financial year. But we had processed this strategy through the International Cooperation, Trade and Security cluster, which is where we felt it would serve in. There was then a recommendation to subject it to other clusters, and this led to then a delay because we needed to take it back to other committees before it could then be finalized. So that delay then meant we could only then submit it to cabinet in this financial year. The other area, the marine special bill planning, the plan was done, the bill was done. An area that we did not meet target on is on the sub-regional management plan, that we're looking at having in that year, and the challenge there was in the main around submissions or the feedback or inputs that we were getting from the different sectors, because this is work that dependent on activities of other sectors as well. And with limited information or inputs being gathered from others, we then approached different clusters to try and get this information, but in that year it meant we did not have the information. Moving on to issues around knowledge and science and policy interface, for the program, the only area where we did not meet the target was around a research on, in terms of effectiveness of marine protected areas. We wanted to have a peer-reviewed report. So the report internally was then done, and the issue was then the workshop to get different sectors to peer review that report that we had. So it took a bit of time, and those were the delays in terms of that. The other targets that we have in terms of monitoring in the ocean and coast environment, we were able to meet those targets there in terms of deployment of also the services there, the systems that we use to monitor. Peer-reviewed scientific publications, we were able to meet our targets there. We were also able to meet our targets in terms of relief voyages that we undertake. There was an area of work where it looked at marine declaration of marine protected areas, and this was done, but it was finalized. The final signature on it was done in the first quarter of 2019-2020. There were extensive delays in terms of consultation that we needed to do also with minerals, DMR at that time. And there was then an intervention at a ministerial level that then led to resolution of the challenges that we had. So in the main, the challenges there was that during the course of the year, there were areas of disagreement between us and DMR on the issues, which were then resolved late and led to the final signature being done in the first quarter of 2019-20. Still on that program, I think the other targets that we have also around sector monitoring for the ocean environment, we were able to meet our targets as planned. Overall, for the program, 17 of the 22 targets were met. There were two targets that were not achieved at all, and three where progress was made, and the targets were then met in the first quarter of the next financial year. Moving on to Program 4. In Program 4, which is Climate Change and Air Quality Management, the Climate Change Response Bill was gazetted as planned for public comment. We did our National Framework for Climate Services and looked at the annual plan for that, which was then developed. The area where we did not meet the target for was around the National Climate Change Adaptation Strategy and the Action Plan. We had intended to have that approved in that financial year, but that was not done. The challenges that we had there is we required a service provider to do socioeconomic impact assessment for this, and due to the delays in appointment of that service provider, we were then not able to finalize the strategy that could be published for comment in time. This was something that we then managed to only do in June of this year. We met our target on our provincial local government and local government climate change adaptation program, which we did. We looked at analysis and needs assessments for them, and we did reports. The mitigation potential analysis was updated as planned. In terms of our carbon budgets, we were able to then comply and provide all information within time frames. We were able to meet our targets in terms of greenhouse emissions, the strategy that we were looking at developing there, and we then monitored our green economy implementation program as planned. In terms of climate change, we had identified flagship programs, one on waste management, one on agriculture, renewable energy, and rainwater harvesting. And all these were then done, and monitoring was done on terms of those flagships, and they were on progress. The areas that we did not meet our targets on, on sector adaptation plans that we are to finalize. So in this area, the department advises the different sectors. So we sit with the different sectors to ensure that they then finalize their climate change adaptation plans. So we had planned to do them for six sectors, the health, agriculture, biodiversity, and water, and we were able to do those four. The two that we were not able to finalize with them was the one around rural settlements, which was not done in time. There were issues here in terms of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, because they even had indicated that they will appoint their service provider that will help them. So ours was to give them guidance and to then facilitate a process to ensure that they end up with a plan and conduct training for them on how this should be done. But there were delays on their part in terms of appointing a service provider that was going to then help them in developing that plan. However, we continued with our climate change training sessions in different district municipalities, so that even if there is a service provider that is appointed to assist them with consolidation of the plan, they have an understanding of what are the key areas that we would need to look at as a department. So that is the challenge, that that is why the target was not met there. The other target that was not met, and we say it's not met mainly because we then did not do the calculation on it, was on the National Air Quality Indicator. So the National Air Quality Indicator also depends on whether the stations that we have deployed in different areas, the air quality monitoring stations, can provide credible data. And we had challenges with the credibility of the data that we were getting out of the stations that were functional. Some of the stations were not functional. Some that were functional, you'd find that they don't meet the minimum requirements around data recovery. So if it is not recovering the data, then we cannot be certain that the trends that they have on the station are accurate. And reporting on the basis of that would be misleading the nation in terms of the status of the air quality. We had challenges with some of the stations being vandalized, and even if you are going to go and repair whatever is damaged in that station, it means you've lost data that should have been captured in some days, and therefore the data that you have cannot be credible. The other challenge is most of the stations are based in municipalities, and there are some where we found that there are financial constraints in terms of adequate maintenance of these stations, which then also leads to challenges in terms of the data issues on those. So as a result, we then did not monitor the national air quality. However, we have made an implemented a plan, a corrective measure on how we then go and support these municipalities where the stations are, and how do we source funding for this so that we are able to then assist in terms of maintenance of these stations, so that they are able to meet the minimum data recovery standards, but also how do we try and ensure better security in those areas where we found that stations were being vandalized. The other area that is a challenge for us still on air quality is around, so we have declared air quality, high priority air quality management areas, and this is in the Highveld, the Vultra Angle, and the Waterberg Bujanala. So what we've done is, because we've identified these areas as high priority, there are plans to deal with air quality in those areas. So each area has its own specific plan linked to the specific challenges in that area. And in the development of these plans, we always work together with the communities of those areas in agreeing on the plan. That is, so there's a stakeholder engagement part that deals, and we look at the NGOs that are in that area to facilitate the development of that plan. There were delays in terms of the Highveld area, where we were looking at the self-apportionment facilitation process. And the issue there is when you do that facilitation process, you then get a service provider that assists you with that work. As a department, we had a budget of around $2 million to look at this area of work. And normally we partner with industry and they also contribute financially to this. In this particular year, the total budget that was coming was around $20 million, and the department did not have that amount, and industry was not coming to the party in terms of the core funding for this project in terms of source apportionment, and this is the reason that this was done. We have had to go back to the drawing board and look at how we best do this without the dependency on industry, because I think the issue of industry and the communities around was so that we get ownership on the plans. But if they are not coming to the party, then the department cannot be in a position where we don't fulfill our responsibilities. We will have to continue doing the plan and just change the approach and look at how can we best do it with the limited financial resources that we have as a department. So that has been the change on that, and as a result, we've advertised a new process that we'll be doing, and we are evaluating the bids that we got in terms of that. Overall performance for this program, they have a total of 16 indicators, 12 of them were met, which represented 75%, and in four of those, the targets were not fully met. I'm now moving to Program 5. In terms of Program 5, the first area was around regulatory systems and ensuring that we have streamlined policies. Apologies. The first area where we didn't fully meet our target there was around the National Biodiversity Framework, which we could not meet the target. We cooperate a lot with provinces in terms of finalizing these frameworks, because most of our protected areas are also in provinces and they need to be responsible for that. There was an issue, a procedural issue, in terms of finalization of this and a subsequent legal opinion that recommended that we then republish the framework for comments, because the view was that while there had been consultation at a provincial level, this did not seem to have cascaded all the way down when it got to provinces in terms of municipalities. So it was brought back, the legal opinion was of the view that then it would mean we did not consult adequately on this framework, which is why it was then republished, and this led to a delay on that. The next area, which was the biodiversity bill, this one was ready and it could have been finalized in the financial year. However, when we then submitted it to Cabinet Secretariat, they indicated that they would not be taking further legislation in that period and we should look at approval in the next period. So this was done already, but then in terms of cabinet processes and the secretariat advised that they would not be able to serve in the meetings that were remaining in the year. I'm moving to the other area where we did not meet the target at all. This is an area around biosafety risk assessment. We were planning to have a workshop. And the intention, this was with the Africa Group. And this workshop was to be convened in March. But not all participating countries were available. So upfront, the date that was agreed to was March of that year, and when we then were doing final arrangements for that, three of the five countries that were to be in that workshop indicated that they would no longer be available. As a result, we then could not convene the workshop, and we only did it in the second week of April, which then meant the activity even though it happened outside the reporting period, which is why we said the target is not met. So that is in terms of program five, in terms of management effectiveness of our protected areas, we met our target. In terms of our people and parks conference and ensuring that we implement the recommendations thereof, we met our targets. We also met our targets in terms of biodiversity economy initiatives that we were planning to implement in the year. The only initiative where we had problems on is on an initiative that we called the BioPanzer initiative. In terms of that initiative, we had three actions or three programs. The first one was on awareness and promotion. That was done. We then needed to do market intelligence and look at economic benefits and how we can unlock markets linked to the BioPanzer initiative. And the other one was also to look at gap analysis of business incubators that we would have in the space, specifically the bioprospecting space. So you would see that the two areas were around how do you create markets. If we've been successful in terms of bioprospecting and communities have identified some of these initiatives that they can have that can unlock economic activity for them, how do you then look at getting market access for them? How do you then look at incubation processes? These are processes that we then felt it was necessary to partner with the DTI because at that time we discovered that they were running similar processes and it would be a duplication in government to then not work together and ensure that they fit into that. And as a result, we then held back on the processes that we were to run there and look at our terms of reference for those to ensure that they aligned with the terms of reference that DTI also had on the same processes. So there was a bit of a delay in terms of those, and but this, then we've looked at, as a corrective measure, we've engaged with DTI and we've looked at what are the areas where there's differences, what are sector-specific issues that we need to be looking at so that we finalize a sector-specific program without necessarily duplicating what they were doing. So that was the challenge in terms of that one. Overall, this program achieved 82% of their targets. Two are the areas where they didn't meet the target totally, is this one, and there are two areas where the targets were partially achieved. This would relate to one where we were ready, but there were delays. We were told to then republish, with, present the item at cabinet the following year. In terms of environmental programs, this is a program where we've had most of the challenges, and this is where we are implementing our extended public works programs. The nature of the work in this program is if you are not finalizing the projects and you are not contracting on the projects, you will then not meet a number of the indicators that you have, which is why you end up with quite a few of them not being met, and when you look at the reasons, they were all linked to the issues around contracting. So when you don't have projects that are finalized on time, we cannot have the job opportunities. So we did not meet the, our targets on job opportunities that we were to create. On the job opportunities, there's this concept of full-time equivalent, which looks at the duration of those job opportunities. So when you haven't met the job opportunities or you start late in the year, even if you were able to cover on the job opportunities, just by the nature of starting late, you will not have the 230 days, which is what makes it a full-time equivalent in a year, which is basically why we did not meet the target in terms of that project. This also had an impact on the youth that we had in those projects. So you would see that we still had, in terms of the percentage was 65%. We still met that in terms of the percentage, but the number was lower because you didn't have enough projects that you had in that financial year. This has an impact on training days because the training days also depend on these very beneficiaries that are on the projects. And if you have less beneficiaries on the projects, on the issue that now we are not, we need to catch up on deliverables. You can't send a lot of them for training because this takes away from actual implementation of the projects as well as you take them to training. So that is the other challenge that we had in terms of that. We also had a challenge in terms of now meeting our SMME usages when we have low, and this in the main was not linked to EPWP. For the SMMEs, we're looking at our wildlife economy, we're looking at our ocean economy, still a bit of also environmental programs. But we also had challenges in terms of SMMEs that we had on, what is this called? In terms of the tire management plan. In terms of the tire management plan, where then when there were challenges there and we needed to engage, we then couldn't get, yes, we then couldn't get all the SMMEs in the, on time for that. The other area of work where targets were not met is in terms of units, the of staff accommodation, overnight visitor or staff accommodation units that we either establish new or we renovate. You would see that we had planned to do 38 in the year, but we were able to only do 34. So we missed those by four. In that construction for those four was not totally complete by the end of the year, but it was already at an advanced stage. So that's why we're saying it's partially achieved. And the certificate of completion for those were concluded, I think, in the first week of the first quarter. Other area that's linked to contracts that were signed late in general was the one around rehabilitation work. Wherever we wanted to do rehabilitation, whether it was in terms of the wetlands that we wanted to do, but also clearing of alien invasive plants, or whether it's the initial clearing or the follow-up clearing. When you have not contracted and you don't have adequate service providers, then it had an impact on the hectares that you could cover in that year. So, but the branch and the unit had then developed catch-up plans for that to ensure that in this financial year we try and catch up and clear those alien invasive species. The other area is around sector monitoring, where we are looking at the State of Environment Report. The SAO is the State of Environment Outlook, we call it an Outlook Report. The Outlook Report, as a sector in the different subsectors, we do our own studies and we report on what the trends are. But for it to get credibility, we always subject it to a review, an external review of that. So while we look at monitoring our own trends, and you would have the oceans unit giving you their state of the oceans, the air giving the state of the air and all those things, we then normally subject that to an independent process so that it's not us giving a sense of where we are. So we then had a service provider that was then looking at this report. However, in the final stages of that, the quality of work that we got in terms of that report meant it needs to go for further review. We have then looked at how internally we can fix some of this, but also partner with institutions like CSIR so that there is still that bit of independence in finalizing such reports and assessments of our trends. So in a nutshell, this program ended up with, out of the 16 targets that they have, only 6 were met, 7 were partially achieved, and 3 were far from the set targets. So it's 38% achievement in a nutshell. Moving on to the last program, which is Program 7, which is our work that relates to chemicals and waste management. Our first area there was to look at phase-out plans for PCB in 45 municipalities, and we did not meet the target there. And the main challenge there was on the base, the information that we were receiving from municipalities, which was incomplete, and we were then, on the basis of that incomplete information, only able to develop a draft plan and not get one that is finalized. The intention was to finalize that. We did do consultation workshops, but we're looking at having more consultation workshops so that we can then assist, because we realized that some of the challenges was in the ability of the municipalities and their capacity to give us this information, and the corrective measure has been it would be better then to go and have workshops with these specific municipalities so that we are clear on the type of information that we require, and so that we can then finalize the plan. The other area where we did not fully meet the target is on industry waste management plans. We were focusing in this financial year on three streams, waste streams. The first one being the paper and packaging, the electrical or electronic one, and the lighting, in industry. In terms of this, we did a call for these plans. These are plans that must be submitted by industry. We made a call for these. The plans were submitted. The plans, in there you would notice that we received in the mail the ones for paper and packaging. 7 for lighting, we only got 2, and we've got 4 for electrical or electronic industry. And when you have more plans, it then means there was a longer consultation process specifically for the paper and packaging industry, because then you end up with industry coming up with a multiple plans that have contradictions in them. That then means you need to go and consult more extensively on those. But those plans were under review, still being considered by the executive authority by the end of the financial year. Chair, I may add that there were also delays here on the basis of the changes in terms of executive authorities. So if you have one executive authority that has reviewed and looked at the plans, but the decisions on those have not been finalized, the next executive authority also wants to have the comfort that the plans would then address. But with that being said, I also want to state that there were gaps in all the plans that we had. There was no single plan that we said would be adequate and meet the requirements. Moving on to the next area that we have, which we did not meet the target, is around percentage of waste tires that are diverted from landfill sites. In this area of work, and the capacity that we've had in the country, there have been in the main two main processors in the country. So there's no capacity for processing in the country. We've run open tenders to try and do invitations for processing. We are not getting adequate responses in terms of that, which then talks to the issue of capacity in the country as a whole. So we ended up with two processors that we've worked with. These were, I think Regis also worked with these two that are there. We then continued working with those. In the tender process, there were issues that they were found wanting on the two processors that we have in the country. They did not fully comply with those. And if they don't fully comply with those supply chain processes, it then meant we cannot appoint them. So the fact that you then had to suspend one of them, the issues were around exports, because they are also allowed to export, and there was non-compliance in terms of that. The other one, and the one that was a non-compliance issue, the decision was so that we don't get to a point where we paralyze totally operations. Let us help and facilitate and ensure that they come into compliance in terms of those. But it meant you suspend, because because you can't continue contracting with them while they still are non-compliant, but you facilitate compliance and then we can look at how we contract. On the other one, the issue was compliance with tax matters, and we couldn't contract with them at a time that they don't meet those requirements. So that had an impact on our processing capacity, which then meant we did not succeed in processing as we would have wanted to. The other area that we did not meet the target is in terms of jobs that are created in the waste management sector. What we had done as a department is, as we took over operations from Redisa, we had requested approval from Treasury, because it was mid-year, to continue with the service providers that they were using, so that we continue to maintain the jobs that they had. However, that approval was a period of a year. After that year, we then needed to go out on tender, so that we could then get our own service providers, own SMMEs or beneficiaries that would then be compliant and be appointed in terms of supply chain processes. In that process, quite a few of them fell through the cracks. They didn't make it through the tender process. That's the reality. And this resulted in some of the jobs that we initially had or and had hoped that would maintain being lost. So that is the challenge that we had in terms of those. Overall, 9 of the 15 targets were met, which makes it 60%, 5 partially achieved, and 1 totally missed. In a nutshell, then, this means for the financial year 2018-19, the department, out of a total of 134 targets, was only able to meet 94 of those targets, which is 70% of the targets. 31 of those, which represent 24%, were partially achieved, and 9 targets were missed, totally missed, in that financial year. That concludes the annual report of the department.
Then it must be accompanied by... Yes, before we can talk.
Well, the department has, the department has an annual appropriation of 7.4 billion for 18-19 and the previous year 6.8 billion. In summary, the department also collects revenue of about 29.4 million and it has also aid assistance from, you know, like foreign countries of about 29.2 million. So in total, the department has revenue of 7.489 billion. This is the expenditure broken down for compensation of employees, that is note 4, 1.135 billion. Goods and services, 3.026 billion, and last year it was 3.496 billion. And this goods and services then, Chair, increase has been adjusted with the EPWP projects. As the Auditor General was saying previously, EPWP projects were treated as transfers. So when you move that about 2 billion from EPWP projects to our ordinary goods and services, then it sits at that 3.026 billion for the current year 18-19 and 3.496 billion for the previous year, because we have to adjust 2 years. So in total then, when you look at the expenditure of the department, its total current expenditure is 4.2 billion the current year and 4.576 billion the previous year. We also transfer to our public entities 1.7 billion and other entities, and then 1.5.37 billion the previous year. So that summarizes the expenditure. We have also, in the classification per modified cash standard, our assets obviously will increase, because we also have to account for the EPWP, you know, like infrastructure projects, the ones that are being constructed by the implementing entities, as I said, that we're transferring to before, and now we have to treat them as, you know, like our goods and services. So then our expenditure for capital assets, the intangible, the capital assets would be 446 million the current year, previous year 405 million, and then we also have, you know, like the, all the softwares, whether we accumulate them from working on fire, where they develop software, including the department, will also include that software for assets, 20 million this year, and then 4.174 million the previous year. And then we'll also pay for our financial, other financial assets, 316 million the current year and 110 million for the previous year. So then our financial performance also has a surplus then of 737 million, which is what we needed to pay back to National Treasury, because we're very slow, you know, like in the EPWP projects, and we had to pay most of the money back. Next slide. That is just an analysis then of our assets, our cash and the cash equivalents, which means money in the bank, including our petty cash, about 20 million this year, and the previous year 228 million. And then receivables, then that would also include the money that, you know, we've transferred, we've made advances to these implementing entities. So we also have to report what they have in the, you know, like in their bank accounts. So we receive their bank statements and their how they've spent the money, mainly of the EPWP projects. Then our receivables will shoot up, including the green fund. It's also included in the receivables. So modified cash standard needed us to account for the money that is sitting in the green fund, and then the money that is sitting with the implementing entities of the EPWP projects. So those figures are big, 685.7 million the current year and 350 million the previous year. So at the bottom there, we also have to account now for non-current assets. The non-current assets in that big figure of 235.968 million will also include the loans that the Green Fund has made. You know, so we just take the financial statements of the Green Fund, whatever that they've reported, that the Green Fund is running was the DBSA, Development Bank of South Africa. We actually merge it with, you know, like our financial statements, and then it gives those big figures then. And then it gives us then total assets of the department after we've accounted for all those, 972 million the current year, 838 million the previous year. And then from there, then you look at the liabilities. We needed to surrender voted funds. We would normally surrender around about the 31st of April or somewhere around May. We surrender those funds, like 727 million that we didn't spend to, you know, like to National Treasury. So what we've shown there, we had to surrender 406 million, if I'm correct, Veronica, but there was something that happened there where Treasury also owed us 393 million, note number 16, as at the 31st of April, that they needed to pay. So if you look at that 406 million that we needed to surrender, and then from there the 393 million that we had in the overdraft, we just needed to balance that out. But on the whole, having taken over, you know, like that overdraft, what we need to surrender, the Green Fund, The net assets of the department is 819 million at the bottom and 545 million of the previous year. So there was a lot of challenges, you know, putting the green fund and whatever. It actually increased our balance sheet. At one stage, we couldn't understand ourselves any longer. Next slide. Well, the goods and services, the normal, all the goods and services are normal. Whatever that we have put in brackets and in bold, it's also the changes that we needed to implement a modified cash standard. To say, under normal circumstances, we'd have, you know, like normal administration fees of a department on line number one. But because we have to put the admin fees now of the IAs, implementing entities of EPWP projects, it shoots up, you know, like administration fees, as explained there, on those bold 103 million. So for 18-19, administration fees are now standing at 129 million, previous year 204 million. So I'm just going to look at the big figures that are being affected by the EPWP project. Previously, our business consultants, business and advisory services, again, would be actually less, but because of the reclassifications, we needed to add more 138 million. You know, like for all those EPWP projects, including agency and support, that outsource services, that reclassification to goods and services. We needed to add the 1.18 billion of EPWP projects. Those are the big funds. So you can see at the bottom there, now our goods and services, which were initially about 1 billion, because of the reclassification, has increased at the bottom total about 3 billion the current year, and 3.496 billion the previous year. As I said, when you adjust the current year, you also have to adjust the previous year. So that's the impact on goods and services. Next slide. Here is just, you know, like our transfers to, you know, like the, we don't transfer much to provinces and municipalities. We transfer a lot to our departmental agencies on line number two, about 1.598 billion. We also, you know, like pay our membership fees to foreign, you know, like countries, 23.5 million, and we also, you know, like transfer to the Green Fund every year. And last year we didn't transfer the 95 million, but we needed to record whatever that we've transferred. You know, like we needed to adjust the AG's recommendation. And we only transferred to households 96.3 million. Those are the EPWP wages mainly that are paid through the post, South African Post Office, where EPWP pull up, you know, like we don't, some of them we do not pay them directly. We transfer money to the post office and then they pay them. Next slide. These are our transfers to our own public entities, the weather services, the South African National Parks, Biodiversity, SANBI, and we also transfer to the National Regulator for compulsory specifications of plastics, and a little bit to, you know, like SABC and the Compensation Fund for EPWP projects. And in total, the transfer then was 1.195 billion, and the previous year 1.210 billion. In addition to transferring to our public entities, we also give transfer funds from EPWP projects to actually clear, you know, like alien invasive species in their own land. We also top them up for their own infrastructure where they run short of infrastructure. We give them EPWP funds. So Isimangali, so you can see them there, South African National Parks and Biodiversity and SANBI, we've given them about 1.598 billion in the current year and the previous year 1.334 billion for their own, you know, like to do those EPWP projects in their own land and also their infrastructure. That is just an analysis of our capital assets, and total is 466 million and 420 million for the previous year. Again here, Normally, we're just accounting for our own capital assets, but this modified cash standard, all the capital assets that are being built by the EPWP projects, I must include them here. You know, like there's my buildings and fixtures. Next slide. Trade receivables. Modified cash standard now wants us to look, after you've given those advances and prepayments to the EPWP projects, when you receive, you know, like the expenditure, I also receive the financial statement where they show the interest that they've accumulated as well as their bank balances. So trade receivables also now increase because you have to account for that. So I've done a little on line number 12.2, I've done an arrow there to say, if you look at it again, we account for the money that is sitting with the green fund. You look at that little bracket, you can see the 356 million. That is money that is sitting with the green fund. And then the other monies, that 13.025 million, it's money where we've given those EPWP implementing agents money. They spend so much, then they give us their bank statements, and then we put it as, you know, like trade receivables. And there's also the post bank where we transferred 360 million, so it's also shown as a trade receivable, so that if we want that money and they are not using it, we can just pay it back to National Treasury. So I was explaining that bracket. And then claims are just, you know, like all other claims that, as the AG was saying, that needed to be claimed, you know, like either from the implementing entities or all other departmental claims. The line that I also need to explain is the EPWP project claims, where the Auditor General and the department, I think the other ones, there are about 7 million of those claims receivable related to prior years. I think that was around 2014, where the department audited some projects and they were not, you know, like finalized and signed off properly, and then we raised claim receivables, which means, you know, it's a contingency that we think those people who are implementing those projects need to pay us back. And about 7 million, actually 7.9 million, is still with the state attorney following up on that money that we think those IAs were implementing those projects, didn't, you know, like close the projects properly. And I think about 5 million that we've actually identified this year of those projects that are completed, and we feel you didn't, you know, like sign the completion certificate or you didn't do that well, we just issued claims against them. And then a little bit of staff debt there, note number 12.4, where, you know, like staff is also, you know, like owing the department, and other small debts right at the bottom. That is the classification of receivables. Thanks. Okay, the next one that I'm going to present while Boniseni is looking for, yeah. So now, based on the financial statements that I've presented, I'm now going to present the audit findings and the actions that we're taking to improve the audit findings. Okay. Even though we received this, you know, like a qualified audit opinion, as AG was saying, all the findings that the AG has made, I've put them on this slide check, and including the corrective actions.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, after moving from transfers to goods and services, well, the AG said I didn't have enough information to ascertain our goods and services. The action that the department is now taking is that we are going to provide, you know, like all the supporting documents that the AG is needing to reclassify EPWP projects from transfers to goods and services. Next slide. the AG again is saying for capital, you know, like assets for the EPWP projects, I didn't have enough documentation. We are saying yes, per chapter 11 and chapter and section 42 of PFMA, we are going to get all the documents that the AG needs for, you know, like for supporting those capital projects which are being built by the implementing agents for EPWP projects. So mainly it's actions responding to the AG. Next slide. So that is still, you know, like the other one would be ordinary capital assets, the other one would be immovable capital assets. Next slide. The irregular expenditure that the AG identified by the 31st of, let me say, by the 31st of July or September this year. The irregular expenditure that we reported in the department was 150 million. In addition, the Auditor General identified irregular expenditure of 249 million. That's the one that he was reporting about, that the department did not disclose this irregular expenditure. We are going to disclose it, Chair, in the interim financial statements because it came, you know, like later to our attention after being found by the AG. Okay. Fruitlands and wasteful expenditure, again, the AG indicated that he went to about four projects, that was Len Vista, Ham Tours, HMP, and I've forgotten the other fourth project. He found, you know, like the implementing entities did not spend funds according to the agreement that they signed with the department. We've actually taken that up with the project managers. We are going to follow up on it. And that irregular expenditure, sorry, that fruitless expenditure that was identified by the AG was 3.152 million. We've put it in here. We're going to follow up with those implementing entities to check whether it should be, you know, like the funds should be claimed from them. The other part of, you know, like reclassifying to goods and services, it kicks out prepayments and advances. We've looked at those as well, where the AG said, I didn't have enough information for those prepayments and advances. We're saying in the interim financial statements, which is now, the interim financial statements we normally submit by the end of this month, 31st of October, so we're going to be looking at those documentation with the AG, which documents that you want to actually substantiate our prepayments and advances. Overstatement of accruals. The AG wanted us to split, you know, like between accruals and payables. So some of you are saying the accruals are overstatements or the payables are overstatement. We also have an action plan to actually correct that as well. Thank you, Chair. I think on the basis of that, the only other issues in terms of the audit report was material findings that AG was raising on performance information. In a name, there were three indicators on the plan where these material findings were raised. The first indicator was on percentage of area of state-managed protected areas, which met the score above 67%. We had set the target at 77%, and the view was we then need to also reflect the hectares and not only the percentage. So the corrective measure going forward is to continue with our engagements with AG at planning phase so that we are clear on the targets and the indicators that we set, and we can agree on those so that we minimize reoccurrence of these findings. The other area was around accredited training days, and in the main, and both the accredited training days and the SMMEs that are used, in the main area, the issues that were being raised by AG are around verification and completeness of information that has been reported. You would note in the first one they would have indicated that the department reported 108,000 while they could find 146. So there are issues around verification of information, so it's around addressing our controls in those areas and ensure that we improve and strengthen our verification controls. So those would be the two areas, and on the one around SMEs and BEE, it's around alignment of the acts there. In the main, that's what it was about, because one act, we looked at our SMEs on the basis of what BEE would define them, but there's also a National Small Business Amendment Act, which has a slightly different definition. So it's around how we bring the two together and ensure that we use the same. So the corrective measures will be implemented in terms of these areas. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Then that concludes your presentation. Honorable Minister, we have just concluded the annual report and the financial statement. So that's where we are. I'll now, unless you want to comment before the members, I will now allow you, honorable members, if there are issues you have noted in the annual as well as the financial statement and the comments that were made to say this is what we intend to do. Number one, number two, number three, number four. Number one.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Mine is firstly on the non-expenditure, but I would like to that the department find ways or have a plan of ensuring that we do spend the budget that is allocated, because the moment we don't spend, it means we're compromising the service delivery. That's my first point. On the issue of slide 13 on this document, annual financial statements, staff debt. In terms of how come we have staff owing the department? Is it a legal thing? How it happens that we have a staff member owing the department, not the service provider, because I understood what was said about the service provider owing the department, because maybe they did not provide. And on the annual performance plan, where we don't meet, sometimes we say the tender processes, is I understood that in terms of the SMME, some of them were not meeting the requirements. But what is it that we are doing as a department to assist those SMMEs to meet those requirements that are there? Do we have any program of empowering them so that they do get to the level of being qualified? But also the last one is that do we plan ahead in terms of the tender processes? We now know the budget, the financial year, before even the financial year starts, we know this is how our budget. When do we start planning for implementation of each and every project?
On the annual report, page 11, the marine protected environments. I'm quite curious as to find out what resolution you reached with mineral resources on those marine protected environments, and whether or not the resolution that you reached means that there is to be no undersea drilling in any of those marine protected environments. The biodiversity bill hasn't made it to cabinet yet. just an indication, please, of when we're going to see, when we're going to be dealing with that? Page 24, the environment after the SAEO report. What, I'd be interested to know what consequences there have been for the service provider that provided that. That shoddy report, will they be allowed to tender again? Have they been paid? Are they part of the trade receivables? And then page 27. Could you just go over again why those companies that bid on the tyre recycling didn't make it, weren't acceptable? And then a little bit of context. What's happening to old tyres right now? Is there any process? Perhaps a line or two on why Radisa collapsed and when you expect to have a new process in place. That'll do for now. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. The first presentation by the DDG, I think on page 2, slide number 4. Huh? Page 2 there. The SG says that the SG has made findings. In the earlier presentation that there seemed to be a backlog in terms of staffing. The DDG says there's only one position of a director internal audit that was not filled, if I captured you well. So essentially it contradicts the findings of the AG. I'm quite keen on where are the areas of contradiction there? Because my view, if you say to us that there's only one position of a director internal audit, it then contradicts the report of the LG altogether. But I will, because these documents are many, Chair, I will be cross-cutting from one to the other. But the CFO says to us that she will be declaring in the interim financial statement fair and good, because the understanding is that the reports came later after the report of the previous financial year. But because it is flagged by the AG, does this mean that you did not pick up? Couldn't you have picked it up before the AG made a red flag on it? But if you did, what is it that you did about it, other than waiting for us to come and hear it from the AG? On page 4, the misconduct cases, I'm sure you'd want to know what is happening there, because the understanding is that we are now in the new financial year. It means they are therefore from the previous financial year, the misconduct cases there. About, and you are saying new corrective measure, a pool of service providers to deal with cases has been appointed, and it will commence work in this financial year. Now, there's one area that I don't understand, Chair. There seem to be many issues that were not resolved in the 2018-2019 financial year. Now, I want to know if do they have financial implications on the 2019-2020 financial year, or does that mean that it's part of the surplus that would then be returned back to the Treasury? I think it amounts to 7 million, yeah, 700 and something million there. So I just wanted to check the implications, and if that money will then be, is this the money that will be returned to the Treasury? On page 8, 41 criminal cases have been finalized and dockets have been handed over to the NPA. Yeah. Is this from all the entities of the department? Is this just cases of misconduct within the department? Are these rhino poachers, etc. But does that mean all entities that belong to the department, or is it one SunPark or one SunLib, and Sanbi or some Ismangaliso and so on. So, but I'm mainly concerned about the implications of finances, particularly the money that will be returned back to the treasury. The last one, Chair, just quickly would be, I think in page 20 on biodiversity and conservation. One of the three planned initiatives of BioPanza were were implemented. There's a problem there. What are the tools of analysis that we are applying to analyze the impact? Does one have to be an MP to know about this BioPanza? If not so, where are we implementing BioPanza? Because I think there's something about awareness and promotion of BioPanza. Where is it done? Quite frankly, some of us interface with it for the first time. Perhaps we must thank the ANC for even brought us here. It's for the first time that I hear about BioPanza. And there are about 45 municipalities on chemical and waste management. You have identified your challenges there, and I think part of your corrective measure is to have a phase-out plan. I want to know if you are reverting back to those municipalities, if we have 293 municipalities in the country, are you going to those ones that failed you, or you are moving on, you are identifying other municipalities and moving forward? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. For some few questions on page 4, where it says 42 on the, what is this? The annual performance report. It says 42 number of environment awareness campaigns done. I think I just want to check, yes, it's good, you've achieved it, you've done 42, but is there any, have the department check on the impact of those awarenesses? Are they positive or negative? Then you go to page 8, there's compliance with administrative enforcement actions. Briefly, what are those? Because it's just the administrative enforcement. What are those the non-compliance notices that we're giving, so that we have a light on what is happening? And then the environmental authorization inspected, 173, which is good, but what is the impact? Because just say what not 173 authorization is inspected, but it doesn't tell us exactly what is the impact, or it's just ordinary authorization or so forth. Then there's 1966 officials trained, which is good, but where are they placed? Are they placed within the national department, or are they in the provinces, or are they in the municipalities, where municipalities have got a shortage? What is happening with those? This is an achievement, which is good. Then when you talk about the building of overnight visitors and staff accommodation, firstly, I just want to know, are you using the recycled material for the building, as it's stated in Pakisa, because you must practice what you preach? Then the other thing, is there anyhow going nearer the green building compliant? Then my worry is on the industrial waste management plan. The number is too low, yet we have so many industries. And we really need these industries to comply so that we divert the waste that is going to the disposal site and can be used or recycled or utilized somewhere, because there's a lot of on those packages you find a lot of papers, lots of boxes, lots of plastic. Plastic, they sit in the disposal site for years, and we don't have disposal site. They are almost full. My worry is that why so many industries, but only few are trying to comply on the industrial waste management plan. Yes, there are those who are complying. There are those also who are recycling their waste. For example, I know the one that does the sports clothing. They started to recycle their own stuff, and including pets and Petco and others. But this is a serious crisis with these industries. That means we don't have manpower to monitor or to enforce compliance to them. The issue of reducers, the tires, have you looked at the communities, the ordinary citizens that are changing the tires into furniture? Because it's trending now. When you go to the funerals, you go to weddings, they use those furniture as part of deco. And I think the arts and culture also is trying to say to encourage people to do that. So what as the department are you doing? And how are you assisting the SMMEs to comply with the tender requirements in future? For example, monitoring and support. Because that's where in page 27 that most of the SMMEs couldn't comply according to tender requirements, of which is good. You can appoint them if they don't adhere, or if they don't fit your tender spec, but assist them in future so that they fit, because those are most, it will reduce the unemployment rate, and also it will increase the number of the black people dealing with the waste management. And it will also reduce some of the things that you find in the location. I just want to know, maybe you might have an answer, you might not have an answer. I know some municipalities tried to have a pilot project on household waste separation. How far is that? How did you support it? Because I know it has failed. How are you going to support that in order for us to reduce or to comply to the waste management hierarchy? Thank you.
Then the last one would be for me, generally underperformance, especially starting from program 3. So I thought you would say, this is how we want to turn around the situation. I know I said you don't have to present that. But that general underperformance, it talks much to us. Those of us who come from where the people are located. I think members have indicated the implications if money must be returned to Treasury, they have indicated. So generally, that underperformance, in fact, looking at all the programs, but starting from program 3, it becomes glaring. And there seems to be this issue of value for money, there seems to be, when I was listening to the budget as it is indicated there, no emphasis on this issue of value for money. I think there is need for that, so that we can see the impact of, if you say to us we're allocated 7 billion, we want to see the impact. Now, it is worse when we underspend where we are supposed to create jobs. I think our focus is there. Now, when we begin to see that this is where we're not delivering, then that becomes an issue. The last point would be, I was sitting in with all the members here in Parliament, where we are beginning to ask questions about this thing of outsourcing. It looks like it's a norm. Now we are unable to demand value for money from them. In the audit report, some of the people who are disappointing us are the service providers who cannot give information that is required by the Auditor General. Now, I don't know why would we go around hire people who are unable, who becomes a problem for the department. I think we need to look at this thing. Some of the comments that we are receiving are saying some of the agencies are not providing the necessary information that is required. So the question is, who is monitoring that? Are we getting value for money, or are we creating, I don't know whether to say jobs for them? Who are they? Equally, we want to talk transformation here. I was looking at this thing of the tires. You know, I think the honorable member did ask that question. If we can say we have run out of service providers in the country, there are only 2. And even with those 2, there are challenges. Does it mean then we must go to Italy and then hire people to come and do that? Are we contributing in building that capacity now in the country? So transformation, we want to see that. I just wanted to add those comments, and I'll then allow Honorable Minister and your department, if there are any comments, responses. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me deal with some of the more policy-related issues, and then I think that the DDG and the team will deal with some of the other questions. And I think that we need to start where you concluded, Chair, with this issue of the turnaround on the underperformance. In my view, it's a crime to underspend money, because we understand that underspending is not a victimless offense. Those who receive the consequences of underspending are those who are the most poor and the most vulnerable in society. And environmental programs is the biggest culprit. They receive the biggest budget, and their programs are the most focused on providing work opportunities to those who need it most. So I think that we would absolutely agree with you that it's not acceptable and the situation will be turned around. I think the having said that, one must understand that there is a relationship between this issue of the modified cash standards and the underperformance in the environmental programs. So as we try to comply with the
requirements of the correct way to procure goods and services in that section, so we find that there is underperformance. So one wants to make that caveat, but I think that this process has been going on for too long, and it can't continue in this way. And I absolutely agree with you that the question of value for money is central. We have to be able to say, in terms of everything we do, are we doing it in the cheapest, most effective way possible? Is there a better way in which we could deliver those services? Turning now to the important issue that is being raised around the management of waste and the important point that is being made about the fact that our country is groaning under the burden of waste and that we have to find more effective ways to be diverting waste from landfills. We've got to find more effective ways to repurpose, reuse, and recycle. I think that what is important to recognize at the outset is that when it comes to the role of industry in waste management and when it comes to the implementation of the principle of expanded producer responsibility, we have voluntary plans and we have mandatory plans. And the fact that there may not be mandatory plans doesn't mean that there isn't good voluntary work which is being done by industries generally. And I think that one of the issues that we are grappling with, and it really comes to your question, Member Lorimer, on the Section 28 processes with regard to waste tires. Section 28 has got very clear criteria that were issued. When you evaluate proposals, you've got to say here the criteria, did they meet the proposals, the criteria, yes or no? And obviously there is a process where industry can resubmit their plans if there are minor digressions from the criteria that were issued. If they don't meet the criteria, then you have to reject the plans. You can't, the law doesn't allow you to amend on the hoof. So I think that would really be why the Section 28 process was closed. Reducers' contracts their plan expired. They didn't reapply under the new Section 28. So what there is some temporary work being done by the Waste Bureau, but that is not a long-term solution to the problem. And it is my intention to get the industry together to discuss how are we going to move forward. Because I think the problem with the way that we've been handling it is we've been looking for an independent body that can play the role of the NPO. We haven't found that independent body, so now we need to pull the industry together and say what are we going to do, what is the way forward. We are busy considering the other Section 28 applications, honourable members. Those would be the other regulated industry waste management plans that we had called for, and we will be taking a decision on those shortly. And then we would need to be moving forward. Look, I think the whole question about household separation at source, there's absolutely no question that that is international practice and that is where we would want to go to. The question is, can municipalities manage it? And I suppose it would be helpful for the committee to call those municipalities that have or had pilot programs and ask them what works, what doesn't work, and why. What we know is that municipalities are the most vulnerable level of government. We know that only 65% of households have weekly refuse removal. So you are dealing with a problem that very basic level of service of a weekly removal is not happening in 35% of households. So you can't expect that that there would be separation. The question you then have to ask is, can you monetize the waste, and can you involve people in voluntarily delivering their waste to certain collection points? And there have been very good experiments that are going on where waste can be brought to schools and other public processes. Currently, we are recycling about 65% of plastic bottles, which is a very good percentage. We have a colloquium on single-use plastics, which is taking place in November. We've currently got 5 work streams that are ongoing, looking at the question of single-use plastics. And I'm citing this example because I think if we find that we get good outcomes from that colloquium in November, it is a methodology that we might then use to tackle the problems in other waste stream areas. Member Norima, at the moment, Section 48 of NEMA, NEMPA, the Protected Areas Act, if you look at Section 48, you will see the processes that have to be NEMPA, not NEMA. You will see there the processes that have to be followed if anybody wants to mine in a protected area. It's not something that that we would encourage. And at the moment, we are involved in the development of the Marine Spatial Planning Bill. And I think the intention of that is then to set up proactively where certain activities can and can't take place. So where fishing can take place, where mining can take place, and those kind of things. Because there is no legislative environment that governs use of the sea at the moment, other than the fishing rights allocation. So I think the whole intention of the Marine Spatial Planning Bill is to set up that framework. But at the moment, the relevant section would be NEMPA, and I think that you could address it. There is a NEMA amendment bill which is currently before the National Assembly. It's in the NCOP. And then the biodiversity bill, we would be expecting it to come to Parliament in 2020. I just want to see if there's anything else I want to deal with. Maybe what, Honourable Ntebe, maybe what would be important is that at some stage we should present to this committee on the biodiversity pakisa, because that is where you would see how we are trying to develop those who would be in what we call the wildlife economy and those who we would see as being in the exploitation of indigenous plants. So BioPanzer is all about how do you recognize the traditional knowledge and the traditional medicinal or healing or other cosmetic properties, other pharmaceutical qualities of our traditional plants, and how do you, in the way in which you exploit those plants, how do you compensate communities not just per ton of what they gather, but for the intellectual property that is associated with that knowledge. And we are busy developing agreements with different indigenous communities, which we are signing, that enshrines their right to the intellectual property around those particular plants. And it's a very important and very significant development because it changes the status of indigenous communities from people who just go around cutting leaves to a situation where people are recognized as having significant intellectual property, which is much in demand in both the domestic and international pharmaceutical and cosmetics industry. So it's a very interesting field, and I think it would be good for the committee to get a presentation on it one of these days. I'm going to hand over to the acting DG and the DVG to answer the rest of the questions.
Thank you, Minister. The Honourable Member asked in relation to the compliance issues and administrative enforcement actions specifically. So just to put it in context, we have two processes if there's a non-compliance. One is an administrative process, which is essentially these notices that we issue. So if there's a non-compliance by a particular industry or whatever the case is, we issue a notice, a pre-compliance notice, requesting them to come into compliance. If they don't come into compliance or if they refuse to come into compliance, we then issue a final notice for them to then comply. If they then don't comply, that takes care of the administrative process, so to speak. We then move on to the next step, which is then a criminal process, because non-compliance with the Act and non-compliance with the notices would constitute a criminal offence. Then the second question related to environmental authorization and our monitoring of those. Basically, it's not only environmental authorizations, it's all the permitting functions of the department. So essentially, if you issue a permit, it authorizes somebody or prohibits somebody from doing certain things, and there has to be a follow-up compliance in respect of that particular authorization to see whether, in fact, they are complying with the conditions related to that permit or authorization. In terms of that, the word gets out, particularly in industries, that if you've got a permit for this, don't be too lackadaisical. They're going to come and check on you, and they're going to come and check that you're actually in compliance with your permit. We do that at the airports also for exports of certain types of animal-related products and so forth, and animals themselves as well. So I hope that answers the question. The 1,966 people that were trained, Honourable Member, it's not only limited to the department and the provincial departments or the local authorities, because we train at all three spheres of government, right? But in addition to that, we also train outside of government. So we have training programs that impact directly on the judiciary, for example. We train prosecutors. We train magistrates. In some instances, we have judges also that we've introduced to our legislation. We also have training programs for the South African Police Services, for Customs, for SARS, because the way we do it is we use them as a force multiplier, because we can't be present at all our ports of entry and exit, for example. So what we then do is we train those officials to look out for our products that are being illegally exported. So it's not only limited to our departmental officials. There's a broad range of training that we do. Thank you.
I think the question was... I'll come to it. I think it was linked to the misconduct. Honourable Modise, you were asking an issue around the misconduct cases that we have reported there and the financial implications of those and the plan. And you were also, I had you to be making the link with the ones that we had where we said it's criminal cases. Just to clarify, the criminal cases are not on internal staff. That I think that's why I was saying Sham can respond to those, because those are...
As I explained earlier, if there's non-compliance with our administrative notices, we then move on. The next step is to actually charge these non-compliant industries or whatever the case is criminally. And these 41 criminal cases are actual cases where a docket is opened, where there is a criminal infraction. The matter is investigated. We carry what we call a green docket or an environmental docket. And because it's specialized, they actually allow us to carry the green docket. It does go through the SAPS CAS system or criminal system, and then that docket then gets handed over to a prosecutor who will then prosecute the criminal matter. So it's not departmental cases of it's environmental non-compliance is essentially that are criminal actions as well.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of the marine protected areas, yes, the final resolution was the declaration of those marine protected areas, which then means they are now part of the protected, yeah. area, so you should be able to, they would be managed as protected areas going forward. In terms of the state of environment reporting, there has been a process that has been followed. Firstly, we withheld payment from the service provider because we cannot pay if we didn't get the work that we expected or what you were contracted to, but we are then following a proper process which it could end up with blacklisting of the service provider, but there is a process that we need to follow in that. So we have we are following that process. There was also a question in terms of assistance to SMEs to meet tender requirements. I think as a department, we just need to maybe enhance the sessions. We conducted briefing sessions for each of the tenders so that we provide guidance on how they should compete and compete for on these tender processes. But today, we probably could look at the process of having these more periodical and extending items. In terms of planning for procurement, we normally do our planning a year in advance. So for this, as it is now, we're trying to finalize the procurement plan for the coming financial year so that we are clear before the beginning of the year on what is to happen. And I think what we've also introduced is that we should try to finalize it in the terms of reference before that. So maybe there is an area where we could look at how do we get the communities and stakeholders to participate in the processes. There was also a question on staff debt and what this would be. Different categories that are applicable, and it's, in some cases we would have issued bursaries, and the condition for the bursary, if you get a bursary from the organization, is you stay in the organization 2 years after completion of your studies. Where people leave, then there is debt. But there's also issues around you need to pass. If you don't pass, you pay back. So you don't end up in debt because you did not complete your studies. We've also had other issues around damaged property of the department. If we can prove that it was negligence on your part, that we end up with damaged vehicles, legal services would then support us in that. But those are the cases where we end up with staff debt. I thought I should just clarify that. There was also a question on a point that was being raised by AG earlier on, and the report from the department on vacancies. My understanding, without responding for the AG, was that they made a point that for the portfolio as a whole, there has been challenges in terms of leadership because of vacancies in leadership positions. That's my understanding of what they were saying. In my presentation, what I was indicating is that in terms of vacancies in the department, at management level, we've had one. So that is that's at least factual information on where we are. We've had other lower levels. I reported we've had the 10% vacancy rate, which in the main were on the basis of budget cuts that we had. On the misconduct cases, Honorable Modise, we have finalized those cases. The corrective measures that we are talking about are just because, as I said, that indicator is an efficiency indicator. So we're looking, it's about time frames. You're supposed to finalize cases in 90 days, and we have been finalizing them in 130 days. We've identified what the challenges were, why there were delays in us finalizing those cases. So our corrective measures are to say going forward. So it's not that there are cases that are outstanding. It's to say going forward, how do we ensure that we finalize within time frames? So it has no real financial implications. I understood your question to be around financial implications. I think on the municipalities, sorry, you asked a question around PCB and the municipalities. So we had targeted 80 municipalities in that year, but we will then continue to go to all different municipalities. So the focus is not only on the 45 municipalities. In the course of the 5-year period, we will then move on to other municipalities. Okay. And I think that then covers the question. Thanks, Seal. For irregular expenditure not declared, where I said this irregular expenditure will be declared now in the interim financial statement. The audit this year was completed very late, and we noted this irregular expenditure, and I noted the comments from supply chain that there is still a process that needs to be followed between the department and National Treasury, where, you know, like, the process of declaring irregular expenditure is going to be confirmed with the, I think it's the chief procurement officer, because supply chain was in disagreement with the AG. And I think there is an agreement between supply chain and auditor general that they are going to, you know, like, approach National Treasury based on the disagreement. So this 241 million is a regular expenditure that came around, you know, like September. The audit normally finalizes on the 31st of July. The 150 million of 17-18 was reported in total. So the 241 million is the one that is in progress. The 737 million where we under expended, the 558 million is from the EPWP project, 95 million is from the Green Fund. You know, because of this modified cash standard, we didn't transfer the 95 million to the Green Fund. We looked at the Green Fund financial statements. We realized they still have a lot of money, so we didn't want to get into another problem of classifying this. And then about 17.6 million was from the recycling enterprises. But what happens is that we do not transfer the funds. National Treasury just debits our accounts in any case and take the funds over. So you cannot carry it over to the following year.
There was a question I was listening with interest where she, Honorable Mkhono, was asking about loans. Yeah. I don't know whether somebody did respond to that. People, what is that? Staff owing the department.
Yes, Chair, I had responded to that question by indicating that the debts are made of money that was in bursaries, where, and also there is money that would have be due from any official that would have damaged any departmental property, and we can prove that.
Yeah, that you are borrowing money from.
No, we don't do loans. No, we don't do loans.
It's fine. Why I'm asking is because we have got the SIU that does not ask from us. They just conduct their own processes. So we don't want to be embarrassed as people who are doing oversight here. I think the time has come for us to conclude this one. Because we are now beyond 1 o'clock. I think what we can raise is that it is our task as the portfolio committee to, we're not the ministry, we are not the department, but we have got a responsibility to scrutinize the actions of the executive. In particular, we focus on the minister. You are supporting the minister, so we are demanding. In fact, the minister is committed to say we want to change this picture. I think that's the simplest we can put. Otherwise, with this kind of picture that we are, if we can continue to talk as if things are normal, would be misleading everybody, including yourselves. There is something that is abnormal. So we expect actions that reflect that. We expect the laws of the country to be respected and to be complied with. We specifically, Minister, said on the issue of procurement, we don't believe that this is a mistake where people ignore the laws. when they procure goods and services. We suspect this is deliberate, and we would expect action and feedback. Otherwise, we would not know what we are doing. If we were to allow the situation as it is, then we would have a problem. So the minister is committed to act. That's what we expect. We'll keep on being partners in making sure that we're getting value for money. When I say we mean the people of South Africa. It's not even us here. So we'll be partners in that. We're still continuing. I'm not closing the session. I'm just closing this one. So we'll come after lunch. I don't know what is after lunch now, because it's 13:38. So there's lunch outside. Yeah, I give you 30 minutes, then we'll come back. Thanks.